Coming up on Golf Today, Lexi Thompson meets the media in Vegas ahead of her PGA Tour debut tomorrow. What did she say, and what is her definition of a successful week? And Luke Nist is also at the Shriners this week after winning in Jackson last week. At 38, why is he playing his best golf now? We'll ask him when he joins us. And yesterday, LIV Golf found out it would not receive official World Golf Ranking points. Today, LIV responds. What was the reaction? Find out next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine. Lexi Thompson about to make her PGA Tour debut tomorrow in Las Vegas. She's had many big-time events, major championships, Solheim Cups. I wonder what the level of nerves are right now.
It's interesting. She said to the media today, actually, and we're going to hear more from her on that, that she didn't feel any particular pressure this week in Las Vegas, which, if that's the case, great. There's certainly a lot of scrutiny on her.
Yeah.
If there's not pressure on her, I'd be very much surprised.
28 years of age. She has been around for a long time. Let's open up the Lexi Thompson file. It's a big file, as you can imagine. Let's go all the way back to 2007, the U.S. Women's Open. This is at Pine Needles in North Carolina. She qualified as a 12-year-old. Remarkable. The Floridian. Someone we would continue to watch as the years went on. She missed the cut with rounds of 76 and 82, so it was the most pressure, speaking of which, that she had ever felt.
Well, Thompson went on to win the 2011 Navistar Classic as a non-LPGA member and became, at the time, the youngest winner in LPGA history at 16 years, 7 months, 8 days, a record that Lydia Ko has since broken.
And she was not done winning. 2014, won her first and only major at the Chevron. She was 19 years old, became the second youngest LPGA Tour player to win a major. It was a great duel, you might recall. 3-shot victory over Michelle Wee West.
Well, it was agony at the Chevron a few years later. She finished second in 2017, losing a playoff to Soyeon Yoo after they tied at 14 under. Thompson was penalized 4 strokes during Sunday's round for an infraction she committed on Saturday that was called into the LPGA Tour by a television viewer. She was given a 2-stroke penalty for incorrectly marking her ball, with 2 more strokes for signing an incorrect scorecard, allowing you to tie Thompson and win with a birdie on the first playoff hole.
One of the most surreal moments in the game. 2017, though, bounce back, wins the race to the CME Globe season-long standings and the 2017 Vare Trophy for scoring, was 3rd on the money list. 2 wins, 6 runner-up finishes, also led the LPGA in greens in regulation and sand saves, and was 3rd in driving distance, 273.8 a pop.
And then in 2019, she decided she was taking a break from social media, as so many do, due to hurtful comments out there.
Thompson was 3rd in the 2021 U.S. Women's Open, losing that 5-shot lead with 10 holes to play. Played the back 9 Sunday in 5 over par, finished the shot out of the playoff, won by Yuka Saso. Lexi was the latest star player to lose a major at Olympic Club on the last day, joining the likes of Hogan, Palmer, and Payne Stewart, among others.
But she's on something of a high right now, Damon. She was a member of the U.S. Solheim Cup team and went 3-1-0 in the most recent matches, including a win in the last singles match, beating Emily Christine Pedersen 2-1. The matches ended in a 14-14 tie, with Europe retaining the cup. And let's take a look at Lexi Thompson's career at a glance, and it's a pretty impressive career. She turned pro in 2010 when she was just 15 years old, recorded 11 victories, and she plays the long ball in the top 5 of average driving distance on tour for 10 straight seasons, and has played in the last 6 editions of the Solheim Cup, and is a 2-time Olympian, 2016 and in 2020. And for more on Lexi Thompson, we're going to head out to Las Vegas and welcome in George Savarikas, who's on site at the Shriners Children's Championship for us this week.
Hey there, Eamon. Yeah, of course, a lot of eyeballs on Lexi Thompson this week as she's getting ready to make her PGA Tour debut. The news kind of snuck up on us last week when word trickled out that she had received a sponsor's invitation for this event. You mentioned what she did at the Solheim Cup. She also played well at the Ascendant LPGA last weekend in Dallas, a top 10 finish. So recent form, her game seems to be trending in the right direction, but it wasn't exactly a storyline that had been developing over months and months leading up to this, with Lexi saying, hey, it's a goal to play on the LPGA Tour. It popped up last week, and now Lexi Thompson with the media this week sharing what went into the decision to say, hey, let's give the PGA Tour a go, and what she thinks of her game here on this layout.
It was basically an automatic yes. I did have plans this weekend, but they moved to next week now, but it was such an exciting feeling. I got the news two Sundays ago, right after I had played at Walmart, so it was kind of surreal. I was kind of letting that round kind of soak in and have a good round under my belt, and then I got that news. I'm like, all right, well, this is all just exciting. So, like I said, I'm just very honored that they want me here to compete this week and hopefully send out a message, an inspiring one.
Yeah, Lexi, you mentioned before the Solheim you found something in your swing, I think you used the word tremendously, that changed your swing. What was it that you found, and how has it helped you since then?
I can't say. I know. No, it was something very simple, but you know, I feel like as golfers and athletes, we kind of have our tendencies of always going back to certain things. Even when we're struggling, we always have tendencies of what our swing kind of goes to, and just really focusing in on this one thing, and it's kind of gotten me a lot better on track with my swing plane and everything. So just really dialed into that the week before Solheim, and I probably hit hundreds of golf balls every day until I got it down, because I wanted to go to Solheim and play my best golf, because representing your country, that's what I live for.
How would you say this course maybe suits your game besides being long?
I would just say, well, first off, it's in amazing shape. It's so pure. But yeah, I definitely get to hit a lot of drivers out there. I feel like it sets up for a good draw, and I feel very comfortable with just aiming up the right side of some of the fairways and playing my little baby draw with my driver. But besides that, you know, you still have to plan for the numbers coming into the greens, play for that little bit of bounce out, because I'm sure it'll get firmer as the week goes on. But it's just an amazing layout. This is my first time, so I didn't really know what to expect besides what everybody was telling me, but it definitely exceeded my expectations.
Most recent LPGA Tour player we saw out here on the PGA Tour about 5 years ago with Brittany Lincecum. It's been a while since we've seen someone make the cut from the women's side over on the PGA Tour. That'd be Babe Zaharias in 1945. I had spoken with, and this was previously, with Danielle Kang, who lives in the area, and what course would potentially be the best fit for someone from the LPGA Tour to make a cut on the PGA Tour. And she had said, right here. And a lot of it is just because the elevation you're playing at TPC Summerlin, the scorecard yardage is, call it 71, 7200 yards, plays more like 67, 68 with the altitude. So if Lexi is going to snap that streak of miscuts when it comes to LPGA Tour pros playing on the PGA Tour, this could be the ideal course to do it.
Zavarigas reporting in Vegas on the 11-time winner on the LPGA, and Lexi gets her first round underway tomorrow, 4:19 p.m. Eastern, alongside Kevin Roy and Trevor Werbelow. We'll have her on the range on our show tomorrow, Golf Today at 3 p.m., Golf Central pregame at 4, and then first round coverage at 5 p.m., so you'll see plenty of Lexi. And during her Tuesday presser, she was asked what a successful week looks like.
You know, yes, good golf is a successful week, but honestly, if I can leave here inspiring others, and especially the kids, the Shriners kids, that's what it's all about and what this tournament is. There's more than just playing golf. If I can inspire one individual, I feel like I'm making progress. And of course, yes, I want to play good. That's a whole nother story, but there's more to life than just performing well, and that's what I want to do. I want to inspire others, and yeah, we'll see where the golf takes me. I know I've played well the last few weeks, and I'll just take one shot at a time. Whatever happens, it's just a blessing to be here.
Smiling, wants to inspire young people. What will be, Eamon Lynch. Sounds like she's in a good headspace.
She does, and some of that has to come with form. Not only the two top 10 finishes on the LPGA Tour, which kind of put the skids on what had been a fairly dismal season by Lexi's standards to this point, but the confidence that she would bring out of the Solheim Cup as well. She looks as though she's in a good place, and let's hope we see her form on the golf course this week kind of back that up. But she did say it would be a career highlight.
Yeah.
To be playing the weekend at a PGA Tour event. And George just pointed out that the last woman to make a cut on the PGA Tour was Babe Didrikson-Zaharias in Tucson, 1945.
Before both of us were born.
Exactly, barely. Shirley Spork did play four rounds at an event in Reno in 1952, but it was a no-cut event. But otherwise, we're talking about a run of about a dozen women playing in PGA Tour events that haven't made the weekend. Let's hope that, you know, she gives us something to cheer about for the next 4 days.
I hope she does, and she can still be impactful even if she doesn't make the cut. But a few things stand out to me in this story. One was George Savarikis' reporting that Daniel Kang said if there was a golf course in Las Vegas for an LPGA player like Lexi to make the cut, it would be TPC Summerlin. She's 12th in driving distance on the LPGA Tour at 270 yards a pop. Her brothers, who have played on the PGA Tour, have both played TPC Summerlin. So she has a lot of people in her corner, people that know the golf course, that live in her house, who know her well, who know her game, that could be a very important asset for her this week.
And I like the fact that she's not setting up the success based on results.
Right.
That it's beyond that. And I would even extend that, you know, it's fine. Have fun. Have a good time out there. Make an impact. Be an advocate for the women's game. I also think it's important to own whatever happens, for better or worse, that I think Lexi ought to, you know, deal with whatever questions come. There'll certainly be happy questions if she makes the cut and plays well. Might be an uncomfortable situation if she doesn't perform well, but I'd just like to see her actually own the process at the end of that, whatever comes.
Easier to answer those questions on Tuesday and Wednesday. A little tougher Thursday and beyond.
That's for sure. Certainly on Sundays. But in case you missed it, we had some breaking news on Tuesday in golf. LIV Golf will not receive official World Golf Ranking points. The OWGR turned down the organization's formal application, citing concerns about its format and its qualification process.
And LIV Golf issued the following statement in response to this news. OWGR's sole objective is to rank the best players across the globe. Today's communication makes clear it can no longer deliver on that objective. Players have historically remained subject to a single world ranking to qualify for major championships, the biggest events, and for corporate sponsor contract value. A ranking which fails to fairly represent all participants, irrespective of where in the world they play golf, robs fans, players, and all of golf stakeholders of the objective basis underpinning any accurate recognition of the world's best player performances. It also robs some traditional tournaments of the best fields possible. Professional golf is now without a true or global scoring and ranking system. There is no benefit for fans or players from the lack of trust or clarity as long as the best player performances are not recognized. LIV will continue to strive to level set the market so fans, broadcasters, and sponsors have the assurance of an independent and objective ranking system and the pure enjoyment of watching the best golf in the world.
So if you're going to distill all of that down, Damon, what it basically amounts to is, please let us join your system. And when you're told, no, you're not eligible, oh, well, it's your system sucks and has no credibility. And that statement is full of the usual false equivalencies and deceptive sleight of hand that you'd expect from LIV Golf here. It's essentially that they don't want to observe the rules and they simply demand that the rules that be ignored or overridden. And you see in the statement they referred to, you know, the sole objective of the World Golf Rankings is to rank the best players across the globe. Well, that's not the sole objective. The objective is to rank players who are competing on tours where the competitive integrity of those tours has been vouched for.
Right.
Which is a fairly significant thing here. And then they talk about how there's, it should be irrespective of wherever they play in the world that these guys are ranked. Well, it is irrespective of where they play in the world, because you look at the tournaments that are getting ranking points this very week. They're in Vegas, they're in Madrid, they're in Macau, they're in Scandinavia, they're in Australia, they're in Indonesia, they're in Korea. This isn't a geography issue here. It's a format issue. It's not the where you're playing, it's how you're playing, it's what you're playing. And simply put, LIV has explicitly not met the criteria. It has said it doesn't wish to meet the criteria, so now it says the criteria shouldn't matter at all. There are consequences to the decisions that LIV has made as much as there are consequences for the players who made the individual decision to go play there.
Well, clearly there was thought in launching LIV Golf. A lot of smart people came together to try to create this, what is clearly has been a rival league to the PGA Tour, but they didn't even apply for official World Golf Ranking status till after their first event had even commenced in London. It almost seemed as if the focus was on the players that they would get, call it poaching, call it recruiting, as opposed to existing in the ecosystem of golf, as it were. It seemed like it was more of a disruptor as opposed to being a collaborator.
And I think the assumption was that if they had a critical mass of top players,
right, that'd be enough.
That everyone else would fall in line.
Right.
And that the World Golf Rankings would fall in line behind them. And as Peter Dawson, the chairman of the OWGR, was at pains to point out yesterday, that this is a technical decision, not a political decision. They simply don't meet the criteria. And as we talked about yesterday, you go back to the LIV Golf event that was held the week before the Masters in Orlando. Sebastian Munoz had a birdie putt on the last hole that would have tied Brooks Koepka in the individual match. And he admitted afterwards that he did not aggressively pursue that putt because he was afraid of three-putting and jeopardising the one-stroke lead his team had in the team portion of the contest. How you can actually judge that as kind of a competitive integrity versus any other regular tour event that on any of these 24 tours in the World Golf Rankings, they're just not an apples-to-apples comparison.
Not traditional. It reminds me a little bit of, in hearing Peter Dawson's response representing the OWGR as chairman, it's almost like the kid that turns in the assignment and the teacher hands it back. This is incomplete. But he was conciliatory, I thought, in his remarks, at saying if you do check the correct boxes, be they a Monday qualifying type of system, be it 72 holes, be it average field size of 75 as opposed to 48, that there could be a path forward for LIV Golf in receiving those points.
Sure, and so many of the administrators and executives in this game are eager to ensure that the money doesn't go anywhere, that it be directed essentially towards their pet causes and their organizations. Mm. He's trying to help them to the finish line for World Golf Ranking points, but LIV is essentially saying, we're not even going to run the race. We just want a place on the podium at the end.
OWGR had its statement. We'll see if LIV makes any kind of adjustments. More news on this Wednesday. We learned at the PGA Tour today announcing that Ben Ahn has violated the PGA Tour anti-doping policy and has been suspended for 3 months, with the suspension being retroactive to August 31st of this year. Ahn tested positive for a substance prohibited by the World Anti-Doping Agency, known as WADA, contained in a cough medicine available over-the-counter in his native Korea. He has cooperated fully with the tour throughout the process and accepted his suspension. He will be eligible to return to competition on December 1st of this year. The tour will have no further comment on the suspension at this time. Back after this.
We're back on Golf Today. The year was 2015, and a 23-year-old PGA Tour rookie, Smiley Kaufman, was an absolute fire in the final round of the Shriners Children's Open. Shot 61, making 7 birdies and an eagle in his final 11 holes. Kaufman had to wait around, though, for 2 hours before he was eventually crowned the champion.
And Smiley joined NBC Sports in January of this year and serves as an on-course reporter for its golf coverage. It's very, very good. Happy to have him as a part of our team. And time for a past champ chat. We welcome in Smiley Kaufman ahead of his tee time. 8 years ago, the final round, you're 7 shots back going into that round. What'd you wake up and think you have a chance to win this thing?
No, absolutely not, Damon. It was a day just like any other day on Sunday. I wasn't thinking about winning. Typically for a pro, right around if you're 5 back, that's when you start going through the scenarios of, okay, if I shoot this and the leaders behind me shoot X, then I'll have a chance. But I didn't even get off to that good of a start that day. I was 1-under through 7 holes. And then, I got to go back and look at it. But I think I birdied like 10 of the next 11 holes or something crazy like that. Just went on this crazy run. And I remember my caddy telling me on the 9th hole, asking, who do you think is going to win this tournament? He said, I think you can win this. And it just kind of woke something up in me. I was like, you know what? Maybe I can. And went on this crazy run. And got a little lucky that the guys behind me didn't finish it off. But I was happy to avoid a playoff, really, because I couldn't feel my hands or legs the last like 30 minutes. But it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that final round 61, you ended up clipping 6 guys into second place by a single shot, Smiley. When you were a rookie so early in your PGA Tour career, was it a little easier for you to not feel as though you were in the mix of this shootout at the very end of a tournament where you could go crazy early, post a number, and then sit back and see what happened?
You know what really helped me was coming off the Korn Ferry Tour and going straight into the fall season. I was already in rhythm, in a playing mode. I knew how to get in contention in golf tournaments, how to win tournaments. And that's one thing these Korn Ferry Tour players that just graduated now don't get the benefit of, is to play this fall season. I was super confident. I was in good form and I was able to capitalize. And that's one thing that these Korn Ferry Tour graduates now, they just finished up last week, now they start in the regular calendar season. It's a little tougher to kind of know exactly where your form is. And, you know, that was a huge benefit to me. And I think there was plenty of other guys that were rookies that year that were able to take advantage. Specifically that year, the week before, Emiliano Grillo won in Napa. And then Patton Kizzire, he was the guy that was competing with me that week as well, who was a rookie. But, you know, that's one thing I'd like to see the fall return back to, is to have those Korn Ferry guys playing, to have those opportunities to get into that winner status and playing for some more money.
How do you think this fall series works for PGA Tour members right now, Smiley? Do you think it's lost some of the identity that it used to have, or does it actually have more identity because guys are really playing for a living at this time of the year?
It has more of an identity, but I think the tournaments kind of suffer from it because you don't get the big names that would show up, you know, a couple big names that would come in the fall. But I definitely think there's the Korn Ferry Tour guys not being in Napa this year. Just, it didn't feel normal not having that new crop of players being in Napa this year. I do think that the fall events should have those players playing, even though they're not accumulating points. So often that you see Korn Ferry Tour players, they have their caddies, their agents, and once they get after RSM, they realize, wait, this isn't the caddy I need. This isn't the equipment I need to be playing. And it's like, all right, I have some time to figure it out before the next calendar season rolls around where you're going to the Sony. It kind of helps you figure out how to play on the PGA Tour and what it's like, how it's different from the Korn Ferry Tour. And I just don't understand why that's still not the case, that they're not allowed to play. So hopefully that does get changed.
Well, Smiley, this week we have an LPGA player in the field in Vegas, Lexi Thompson, sponsors exemption. Peter Malnati said, listen, you know, we don't have to resort to, he said the word gimmick, and then he took the word back and said it's not against Lexi, but the fall, you know, needs an identity and needs to have great players. What are your thoughts on Lexi playing, an 11-time winner on the LPGA, competing this week at TPC Summerlin?
Well, first off, the Thompson family's very close to mine. I played college golf with her brother, Curtis, played on tour with Nicholas, and then I've played a bunch of golf with Lexi as well. She's incredible. I mean, what she's able to do with the golf ball is I think she can, you know, make a cut in the PGA Tour event. Whether it's, you know, that's the only confusing thing about this week. It kind of goes back to, you know, what is this fall season? And to me, this fall season's all about, you know, this group of 126 to 200 that are playing for their jobs. And so I definitely see why people could see, you know, why give a spot to Lexi when you could have given it to a player who's trying to earn their job. And I'm sure there was a player or two this week that didn't get a sponsor's invite that are doing the Monday qualifier wondering why they weren't given a spot and an opportunity to keep their job. So from both sides, what I understand, just the timing doesn't make as much sense. I definitely think Lexi playing on the PGA Tour in an event is great for the women's game. It's great, obviously, for her brand. And I'm excited to see how she'll play. I think it's a golf course that she can play well on. But to your point, Damon, it is kind of it's a little odd in the fact that it doesn't necessarily fit what this FedEx Cup fall is all about, which is guys playing for their jobs.
You're just back from Rome, Smiley, where you were at the Ryder Cup working for NBC. What did you make of the American team's performance there and their struggles overseas? Is it just as simple as the best players not playing their best that week?
I think it's all that, Eamon. And one of the things that I looked at, just as far as the stats go, the European team, they were just so much better off the tee. They were able to put the ball in the fairway more often than the American side was. And really, for whatever reason in the Ryder Cup, the European team seems to always putt better. And I felt like they made more crucial putts. They hold out chips more. And I think you'll... You know, there's going to be a lot of questions about Zach Johnson and his picks, his lineups. But I think more credit needs to go to the identity that Luke Donald created for that European team. It seemed like they were playing for more than themselves. They really bought in to just really the team atmosphere of what Luke Donald created that week. And you could see it with the guys, and you could see them playing towards the fans. And I've been to plenty of SEC football games in my day, and I tell you what, it was my first Ryder Cup, and it felt so much like going to a football game, and the atmosphere, and just really one of the coolest events I've ever been to, and I couldn't be more excited for Bethpage, because I think then that New York crowd might take it to another level.
And Smiley, it must have been weird. You're covering players who, in some cases, are your dear friends, Spieth, Thomas, Ricky. Some might say that the team is too much of a buddy system as opposed to the captain just saying you're playing with who, that the players have too much power. What do you think of that sentiment?
Well, I've had no problem kind of separating the two with my friends and being able to analyze golf, call golf how I see it. And going into the week, you could have made a case. Really, I think Brooks Koepka was a guy that I kind of had on the team. But the other five picks, you could have made cases against them. And you could have made a case for, I think, 7 to 8 more players to be on that American Ryder Cup team. It just wasn't as cut and dry as it was 2 years ago at Whistling Straits. And even looking back to the President's Cup, just how easy it was to pick that team. You know, you had Will Zalatoris and Cameron Young, two players that going into this year you felt like were going to be on that team, that one gets hurt, one is out of form. And then you had a year where JT had his, you know, worst statistical year. But, you know, he's your best Ryder Cup player going into it. How do you leave him at home and lose? So there was a lot of factors that went into it, and I'm sure that it was highly debated who was going to be picked. You know, I could have seen, obviously, Keegan Bradley being a pick. He played so well this year. I think he would have fit really well on that golf course. So that's one guy looking back. I could have seen Keegan being on that team, but it's easy playing Monday morning quarterback. You know, it's a difficult job that Zach Johnson had because he had so many options. And I think Luke Donald was fortunate that his team over the course of the year, his depth, it kept on getting better and better. He had young guys and a youth movement show up that he didn't have 2 years ago at Whistling Straits. You know, I talked to Padraig Harrington and he had said that European team was left out in the dust. Don't even bother showing up in Rome. And that team, just the three best players in the world, obviously, are outside of Scottie Scheffler. You know, they showed up and they played well, and they were going to be tough to beat if those three guys play well, Rahm, Hovland, and Rory. And the American side just didn't, they just weren't quite in form.
Smiley, I know you got a tee time. I'll leave you with this. Your own game. Listen, Chris Eubanks in the tennis world, play tennis, put on a broadcast headset, and saw tennis from a different perspective. Is there any chance you'll come back and play some PGA Tour golf? I love having you in Tommy Roy's trailer, but listen, man, I'll write some sponsors exemption letters for you. You play out of a past champion category.
Well, I haven't gotten to play a ton of golf this year. I've been working so hard on, with NBC and Golf Channel 20 weeks this year and starting a podcast. That's been taking a lot of my time up. We had our first baby in January. So all three of those things have taken up a lot of my time, where I've probably only played 20 times this year. I'm about to go tee off now. I hadn't played in about a month. So if I go low today, Damon, we're not going to rule it out. But if I'm 3 over through 4, we're never playing again. So we'll see.
Once a golfer, always a golfer. Smiley, play well, have fun, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. See you guys.
Smooth sailing for Smiley. There was a traffic jam, though, at the top of the leaderboard Sunday night in Jackson, Mississippi at the Sanderson Farms. Luke List broke free with one long putt. The most recent tour winner joins us next. Back on Golf Today, Luke List knows a thing or two about performing under pressure. Last year, picked up his first PGA Tour win in a playoff, winning the Farmers Insurance Open over Will Zalatoris. They were chasing the sunset outside of San Diego, Torrey Pines South. This was some duel aim, and two guys looking for their first PGA Tour win.
That's a heck of an exclamation to winning it. He'd been 0-1 before that in playoffs. He'd lost the Honda Classic to JT's birdie on the first extra hole back in 2018.
Able to capitalize in La Jolla last year. Then on Sunday, similar, sun's going down, Sanderson Farms Championship, played in the third to last pairing, made into a five-man playoff, and Ben Griffin bogeyed two of the last three. Luke List from 43 feet, we'll call it, to win the title. Kids are a little bit older now. 500 FedEx Cup points, exemptions in the Century Players, Masters, and so many other goodies, and Luke joins us now from the Shriners. Luke, congratulations, five-man playoff, sun's going down, Ben Griffin's disappointed, you have new life. How would you describe the mayhem of that last 25 minutes or so? I think he's thinking deep about the answer, or he can't hear. So try to get connected with Luke in just a moment. Really one of the great moments of the FedEx Cup fall.
It has been, and he's also 38 years old, and that's it's a strange time in some ways to find your game. But, you know, he did the same thing a little over a year and a half ago, taking down Will Zalatoris, who was one of the rising stars of the PGA Tour in the playoff at the Farmers. Then he does it in this group, which includes several very promising players, not least of which was Ludwig Uberg.
Yeah.
The kind of the rising stud of European golf, and he never even really got a shot at that one.
Yeah, a 43-foot putt that goes down, and I think Luke List is rejoining us now. Just wanted to ask you about the mayhem of that last half hour or so. You know, you got Ben Griffin, who's disappointed. It's a five-man playoff. The sun is going down. How would you describe that scene?
Yeah, full range of emotions. I mean, feeling like I came up a few shots short, and then just kind of seeing what transpired. Obviously, 16 and 18 there at Country Club of Jackson are pretty tough finishing holes, and there's no guarantees, and it's very difficult to win for your first time, as I know well. So, you know, I was hopeful, but also surprised to see what went down. And then it was pretty quick turnaround to jump back in the playoff. And then my mindset just shifted into, let's just try to make birdie any way I could.
Luke, we just saw the footage of your first win on the PGA Tour, that playoff victory at Torrey Pines last year over Will Zalatoris. It's been something of a struggle for you at times between that win and this win. What changed for you last week that you hadn't had in the previous few months?
Yeah, I mean, most of my career comes down to putting. I've worked really hard at it at times and gone through a lot of ups and downs, and it's been pretty polarizing. So for me, the work I've done with Cameron McCormick on the greens in the last couple months has really paid off, and I feel like I've kind of turned a corner in confidence-wise and just expecting to make, you know, most of my short putts, and then just being a little more freed up where you can actually try to hit your lines and then trust that you're going to make the right stroke. So it all boils down to putting, and from there, just having a good attitude and trusting that you know, that you're going to be in contention there. And that was kind of the mindset, just get yourself in contention. It was very fortunate to come on top.
What was the mindset and the read while standing over that putt? 43 feet, that's no gimme. What's going through your mind? You're not trying to lag it. Are you trying to make it? Just take us through the thought process there.
Yeah, I didn't hit the best 7-iron. I hit a better 7-iron in regulation. I hit a great putt in regulation. So, you know, my speed had been good all week, and I kind of just told my caddy, you know, I was pin high, and I said, I'm going to make this. And just, you know, just that positive approach, you know, it doesn't always work out, but I wasn't thinking anything other than trying to hit my line. And once I saw it halfway roll over my spot, I was optimistic. And then for it to go, you know, go in like that is obviously just a bonus.
Luke, they used to say that winning takes care of everything on the PGA Tour. That's not entirely true anymore. I mean, the guys who finish 51 through 60 on the FedEx Cup fall points list get into two elevated events, the signature events next year, the AT&T and the Genesis. You're currently 61st on that list. How much is that on your mind to improve on that position in the coming events?
Yeah, that was my goal starting the fall, so I've obviously, you know, really helped my chances upcoming for that. I'll probably play the, you know, four events to close out the rest of the fall series. So, you know, I've taken care of a few cool things with the Century, Tournament Champions, an elevated event, and then now the Masters and PGA. So those are all obviously, you know, tournaments I really want to be back in, those top tier events and majors, and that's where I expect to be. And, you know, I've got some work to do left to finish in that 51 through 60, but it's motivating to kind of, you know, enjoy the win, but also put my head down and try to finish strong here.
Couple of great wins the last couple of seasons for you, but it took you a while. You were a fantastic amateur, twice a member of the Palmer Cup team, runner-up in the U.S. amateur. Was there a time in your young professional career where you thought, maybe this is just not going to happen for me?
Yeah, a lot of my peers were able to get out on tour a little quicker and have some success that I, you know, played growing up with in junior golf and amateur golf that I felt like I was just as good, if not better. So, yeah, you know, I made, I'd say, some, you know, probably bad strategic decisions in my young career, and whether it's equipment or just the way I prepared. And, you know, just evolving as a person and getting married and having kids puts a lot of things in perspective. And for me, you know, fortunately for golf, it's not a quick quick career, and there's evidence in that with Stuart Sink and Lucas Glover and guys who've had success in recent years into their 40s, and that's kind of where I see myself is. As long as I can stay healthy and keep my head on the right way, I'll look forward to playing for, you know, for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Are you a fan, Luke, of what you see now in terms of this new fall setup in terms of the schedule on the PGA Tour? You know, last year it was the start of a wraparound season. This year it's kind of a mad scramble for status for 2024. Which do you prefer?
You know, I go both ways. You know, the top guys have kind of set the precedent for what they want out of the tour, and you know, they run the show, and whether or not the commissioner or anyone wants to listen or agree with that, they've earned the right to kind of stay their peace and get their benefit. And if that's, you know, finishing the year at the Tour Championship and then having the entire fall off without losing any ground, then that's the way it is. So, you know, we're thankful for those top guys and driving the purses and the media up. But also there's a lot of guys out here with some great stories. And I think that the fall is a great opportunity for us to really sink in and get a win or kind of get some status and keep your card. That being said, too, I really feel strongly that I wish the elevated events were bigger fields. 120 seems reasonable to me. So I understand that the top guys don't want to run the risk of missing out on the weekend for sponsors. But in my opinion, I still wish the elevated events were 120 fields.
Well, there's also a great woman in the field this week at the Shriners, Lexi Thompson, 11-time winner on the LPGA Tour. Your thoughts on her making her PGA Tour debut this week?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I played with Lexi back in the day at the Shark Shootout, and she's obviously had an amazing career on the LPGA, and she kind of moves the needle a lot for young American girls coming up. And so for any opportunity for her to cross the barrier and play, you know, against the guys, she's done well, and I think that she'll do well this week.
Speaking of young American girls, your daughter, did she name the chicken the Sanderson Farms Trophy Barney after the purple dinosaur? Give us some background here.
Yeah, I mean, her naming of things is pretty funny. I don't think there's any rhyme or reason. Just the name Barney, I don't think it had anything to do with the show. It was just her random name that popped in. She was more upset that the trophy didn't make the trip with us, but we had to order her own little trophy. So hopefully that comes in Amazon Prime coming up today or tomorrow.
Maybe it was because of the purple shirt that you were wearing on Sunday in Jackson. Luke, congratulations Maybe. On win number two. Have a great week in Vegas.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate having me.
Back on Golf Today, Sunday, top 30 players in the Korn Ferry Tour points list earned PGA Tour cards for 2024, which for the latest group of Korn Ferry Tour grads begins in January at the Sony Open in Hawaii. 34-year-old Tom Whitney is tour bound for 2024. United States Air Force veteran earned his first PGA Tour card with 6 top 10s this season. Played golf for 4 seasons at the United States Air Force Academy, and after graduation in 2010, fulfilled a 4-year term on active duty in the U.S. Air Force, served as a nuclear missile operator assigned to Francis E. Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Initially turned pro in 2010, but not play professionally full-time until May of 2014 when he won an e-golf tour event in Palm Springs. A week after leaving the Air Force, joins current PGA Tour rookie and Korn Ferry Tour class of 2022 grad Kyle Westmoreland as the second Air Force Academy grad in history to earn tour membership. Here's a special moment after Tom locked up his car.
How cool is that?
It's pretty sweet. I won't be misplacing this anytime soon, that's for sure.
How many years do you think you've worked for this piece of metal here?
Oh, man. I mean, started playing golf when I was 7. Competitive probably since I was 8. Full-time pros for the last 9 years. So, yeah, a lot of different numbers there, but a lifelong dream achieved for sure.
And Tom Whitney joins us now. We've done interviews with guys from golf carts and cars. Tom, where do we find you on this Wednesday?
Hey, guys, how you doing? Yeah, I'm out here on the river in Branson, Missouri. The family and I took a detour on the way back to Dallas just to kind of rest up and enjoy the fruits of our labor. over the last long season.
You served in the military, United States Air Force. I'm so impressed with folks who serve their country and also find a professional sports career. David Robinson, Napoleon McCallum. How have you made this work?
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing is the Air Force taught me a lot of how to manage my time. It's taught me to be efficient, and you know, I have the full support of my family behind me as well. So when I go out and practice, it's very efficient, it's very thoughtful. And then when I'm home, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, and over the last 9 years, I mean, I've learned a lot. You know, it's taken me longer than I thought it would to get to the tour, but I mean, the timing's perfect. I can't think of a better time to get there than now, and I'm looking forward to 2024.
Tom, you didn't play professional golf full time until you won a mini tour event in California a week after leaving the Air Force. Was that kind of a light bulb moment for you when you realized you could actually do this for a living, or was that your intent all the way along?
Yeah, so you got to realize, you know, I gave up a very secure job with guaranteed promotions and very good benefits to chase a white ball and chase a sport that plays no favorites. So the fact that I won my first event as a full-time pro less than a week from separating from the Air Force was absolutely validation that, hey, this is the right choice. Let's give it a shot and see where golf takes me.
A nuclear missile operator, what exactly did you do?
Okay, so me and a crew partner would go about 100 feet underground in a nuclear silo, and there we are directly in charge of 10 of our nuclear missiles. We pull a 24-hour shift together. We are ultimately in charge of turning the launch keys and launching the missiles if the president sends the order. Other than that, we are in charge of all the tests, exercises, maintenance, security responses. Everything planned and unplanned has to go through us in order to get it done and worked on the missile.
That's the kind of responsibility that makes professional golf seem fairly casual by comparison, Tom. I read a quote that you'd given Ryan French in the Monday Q on social media, that if the Corn Ferry Tour was going to be your peak, then it wasn't worth the time away from your family. Was there ever a point where you did think about walking away from the game?
I would say over the last couple of years, maybe the thoughts had started to creep in and we were inching closer. And really that just led to some long, hard conversations between me and my wife, Jess. And ultimately that was the thinking. If I didn't think I could break through to the PGA Tour, then it would probably be time to be a full-time husband and dad at that point. We never set a timetable on it. And what's interesting is it only took 1 year after kind of having those hard conversations for me to get my card.
Tom, you've been through a lot. You lost your brother, Bob. I read the same story as Eamon, the Ryan French story. It's a beautiful kind of dedication. I know he's been on your mind a lot these last few years. How much did he cross your mind, especially on Sunday, with this accomplishment going to the PGA Tour?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Bob's really the only reason that tears happen for me on Sunday, and in fact today would have been his birthday, so yeah, his support both when he was with me and after, it's always fueled me, it's always motivated me. He was my biggest fan, there's no question there. He was in constant contact with me through the good rounds and the bad rounds. And it was definitely bittersweet not having him here with me to celebrate. But, you know, I'm also so grateful that I have so many good golf memories with him, that, you know, I had a brother that deeply cared for me and my success and just wanting the best for me.
It's a tremendous accomplishment for you and your family to have gotten where you are now, Tom. What if we're having this conversation a year from now, what constitutes a successful first year on the PGA Tour for you and your family?
You know, I think I'd like to keep in my card and just proven that I can play as well as needed to stay and compete with the best of the world. But at the same time, I think I'm probably going to write down some goals where, you know, I was in contention multiple times this year, probably double digits. And I can see myself being in that position next year as well. So, you know, everyone would love a win. I'm just looking for some good fights out there and see if I can come out on top on one of them.
Well, Tom, the PGA Tour is getting quite a player and person. Thank you for your service and congratulations.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
We have a couple of major champions teed up on Golf Today as we continue. Stuart Sink, he's fresh off the plane from Rome where he was one of Zach Johnson's vice captains. Now he's back working on his own game in Las Vegas. We're going to ask him about both. And Morgan Pressel, she's also joining us. She's going to talk about Lexi Thompson's big week as she makes her first appearance on the PGA Tour in Las Vegas. And there aren't many better feel-good stories in this game than the Monday qualifier to make it into a tour event. We have a great one for you, and it's not the first time he's visited with us. Golf Today continues right now.
Golf Today.
Golf Today rolls on this Wednesday. Reminder, we're getting closer to live final round coverage of the Jackson T. Stevens Cup from Trinity Forest, Dallas, Texas. Top men's and women's college golf programs compete coming your way 4 p.m. Eastern time right here on Golf Channel. Damon and Eamon with you. Shriner Shorten's Open Vegas. We want to talk about an eclectic field. This one has it.
It really is, and it's fun this show. We're kind of talking about all these people who are heading out there full of optimism and, you know, brimming with this kind of vim and vigor to take on the PGA Tour and in some cases the LPGA Tour next year. But this is one that actually has a pretty notable field in Las Vegas this week. You see Ludvig Åberg there, the young European stud from the Ryder Cup. Tom Kim, the defending champion. Lexi Thompson, we talked about a lot this week. And another guy who was in Rome in an official capacity, Stuart Sink, the 2009 Open Championship winner. He was there as a vice captain for Zach Johnson.
Exactly was. It was back in July when Zach Johnson named Stuart as the fifth and final vice captain for this year's U.S. team. It was the first time Sink served as a Ryder Cup vice captain, having played in five Ryder Cups, including helping the U.S. win back in 2008 at Valhalla. And it's great to have Stuart Sink with us. He's getting ready to play in Las Vegas. I imagine dealing with some jet lag. I'm sure there were some great memories in Rome, a lot of bonding, but Stuart, how much does the loss still sting?
Well, it stings, obviously. I wouldn't change one thing about the whole experience except for the final result, to be honest. It was an amazing experience. I love serving for Zach and for the United States team and all the players and even the wives and girlfriends. It was just incredible. So there are no real answers to what happened, but it's just one of those things when you put two teams on the field that are so closely matched and everybody's amped up that somebody's going to kill and somebody's going to get killed. And in this case, unfortunately, we came up on the wrong end.
Stuart, you've played on five teams, so you've been asked this question often enough, I guess, as a player. Now you get asked it as a vice captain. What would or should the United States team or Zach or you as a vice captain, what should you have done differently or could you have done anything differently?
I don't know that you could go back and do anything different. And, of course, we have the benefit of hindsight. So I feel like our pairings were really good going into the week, and we got steamrolled on Friday where we had what I thought was like our best lineups out there on both Friday morning and afternoon. And I think the other assistant captains and Zach would also agree with that we looked great and we felt great. The players wanted to play with each other. They were all playing great and just getting along. Like, it was like a fraternity over there, just like everybody was so tight. And that's not something you see every time in a cup. And they just they were a little flat, and the Europeans were just on top of everything and played great. I watched Victor play all but one of his matches, and I watched Ludvig Åberg play his matches and Rahm, and it was just astonishing. They played really, really well and even outperformed their normal baselines, which is hard to do. But that's what you got to do to win the Ryder Cup. You know, you got to show up and really be ready to go. And, you know, who knows? There's probably some factors, us going over there. You know, maybe the time change caught up with us a little bit. It's hard to assess that, really. But all in all, our team was a really good team. And they just didn't quite play well on on Friday morning and got thrown for a loop. And I think that affected Friday afternoon too. And there was some heroics on the other side, and it was a great experience. Like I said, I hate losing, and I know everybody's disappointed for that, but I just don't know that we can really go about second guessing Zach and his decisions. It was solid all the way through. Just didn't happen on the field.
Well, from Friday's disappointing play to Monday morning quarterback, everybody has an opinion. As you know, it used to be that the American team didn't like each other enough. 12 players, 12 cabs. Now it's like, oh, they're too buddy-buddy. It's too much of a friendship circle, and the players have too much power in terms of who the captain's picks should be. Where are we in this U.S. Ryder Cup process?
Nothing here.
Oh, I was loving that question, and I couldn't wait for the answer. Hope we get connected with Stewart again. But that seems to be the question, no?
I hope Zach wasn't behind him there pulling the cable.
I want to answer that one.
Well, it's definitely one of the subjects that's gotten a lot of attention over the last couple of weeks, because Zach was very open at the Ryder Cup in his press conferences that he gave a lot of weight to the voices of the players who had made the team when it came to making the selections for the other six. And I guess that's one of the questions that now arises, is the comfort level almost too much? Is having the team be comfortable in each other's company necessary or always the key to actually delivering a performance from a team? And, you know, it's a thing, something you look at remotely as a potential issue. The guys in the team room are unlikely to agree with that because they are comfortable with each other.
They are. I mean, it's important, but you just want to think that the guys are walking into that team room saying, I'm going to perform with no conditions. Don't care who I play with. Don't care if I play 2 times or 5 times. I mean, you hope that is what they do. It seems that that's what the Europeans do. That could be an exaggeration, but to hear the Justin Roses and John Rahms tell it, they walk into that room, they put on that blue shirt, and they're just one of 12. They're not John Rahm and Justin Rose anymore.
No, and when you have a situation where you have players advocating for other players to be picked, they do kind of open themselves up to scrutiny. Scotty Scheffler was very much an advocate for Sam Burns. They had played together in the President's Cup previously. Unfortunately, they hadn't actually won any matches in the President's Cup. And their performance in the alternate shot on Friday morning wasn't impressive at all. They lost in it, and Sam Burns has struggled with his ball striking. It would seem an odd format to put him in. So I guess when you make decisions and when you give weight to players, then I suppose you got to be able to live with the criticism that will come after that. And, you know, at some point, Zach's probably going to sit for an interview with someone and he'll go through the decisions he made and why he made those decisions.
How about the home-and-home aspect of what the Ryder Cup has become? Now just the home team wins. A couple of years ago, the conversation was, well, the Americans are never going to lose again. I mean, there's 19-9. I mean, it was not even close. And here we are 2 years later, and now it's the Americans are... You know, everybody's not sure what's going to happen going forward. But I tell you what, it wouldn't shock anybody, at least it wouldn't shock me, if the Americans got it done at Bethpage and then we're just having a different conversation going into 27.
Does it bother you that there have been now 5 consecutive blowout matches?
Yes.
The last one that was close was Medina, and that was 11 years ago.
Yes.
And by the time, that's going to be 13 years by the time we get to Bethpage. There's so much passion in this event. There hasn't been a lot of Sunday drama, at least late on Sunday.
I agree. The Solheim Cup seems to have found the sweet spot. They've had tremendous battles. And we've had the same conversation about the President's Cup as well. Thank goodness we saw a little bit of tension in Charlotte, for example, as opposed to what we saw at Liberty National. I do think that the Ryder Cup, we need to have a Medina. We need to have a close call, a 91 at Kiowa. Where it's nip and tuck. I mean, for the American golf fan to wake up on Friday morning, those who do not wake up at 2:30 or 5 a.m. to watch the early sessions, to see that the American team was already down 4-0. It just, the air was out of the balloon before the event was even warm, Eamon.
And the U.S. team is really going to need to keep it close in 2 years from now, because the Bethpage fans are the most boisterous fans in the entire sport. You could argue belligerent as well, but the atmosphere we're going to see 2 years from now is going to put everything else to shame for a Ryder Cup.
Let's bring Stuart Sink back in. We've got him plugged back in. We appreciate the thoughts of the American vice captain. My point was, you know, there was a time when we thought that the Americans didn't get along well enough. 12 players, 12 cabs. Now it's buddy-buddy. maybe they're too close together. What are your thoughts on where the American team sits from a philosophical standpoint?
That's a great question, and I've heard both sides of it for a long time. But, I mean, which one are we going to argue? Do we need more or less of camaraderie and chemistry in the team room? I don't really know where to go with that. One thing I can definitely say is that it was 13 years between my last playing Ryder Cup in 2010 and this one where I was vice captain for Zach. In 13 years, I've seen the team room change quite a lot, where just like out here every week, like at the Shriners here in Vegas, golf has become a profession, and the guys and gals that play golf treat it like a profession and like a job. And it's no different when they go to an event like the Ryder Cup. There's cold plunges, there's workouts, there's table treatments, there's diet, you know, restrictions, or they're professionals, and they have to have the freedom to be able to move about in that kind of space. And so what ends up happening is the team room atmosphere kind of starts to dwindle a little bit, and I'm sure the other side would feel the same way. And but our guys, when we were together for our dinners and on the rides to the golf course and at the golf course, it was so close. I mean, you could put a table for four out there in the middle of the room, and all 12 of them would huddle up around it and like sit shoulder to shoulder, just like giggling with each other. It was really great to see. And I certainly don't think that had any impact whatsoever on the golf course at all. I know that those guys wanted to play with each other. There was a lot of green lights. And look, they just were not able to execute in the first round of the tournament. It got us in a hole, and you just can't dig out of a hole when the other team is smelling blood and playing so well.
Stuart, you said that it's sort of a job, and they're taken in a very professional manner. And, of course, we all expect to be paid for the jobs that we do. And that became a noisy conversation around the Ryder Cup. And in fairness, it wasn't just a Rome conversation. This is a conversation that's gone on for 25 years around the Ryder Cup. Where do you fall on that question? Is as a player for you, was the charitable contribution made in your name sufficient? Or do you think there's a valid argument to be made that these guys ought to be paid for the time they put in?
I don't think that the Ryder Cup should be paying players. I mean, I think it's I don't think the Olympics pays anyone to play. I mean, I may be wrong about that. I don't know. But I have a feeling that anytime you represent your country and you get the privilege and honor of joining a team that's doing the same, that it's probably not a pay situation, that we get paid enough during the year. And being on the team at the Ryder Cup has its own, indirect payments that you're going to receive down the road. A lot of contracts are structured where there's some Ryder Cup membership bonuses and stuff like that. So I don't think we need to get paid directly for playing in the Ryder Cup. I really don't. And I don't think most players think that either. I just think that everybody does see things a little bit differently, and then you've got the team around the players that sees things a little bit differently. But in my case, it's not something we should be paid for. And our charity definitely benefits in a big way from membership on a team like that. And even as a vice captain, my charity is going to benefit somewhat. And it's a great thing that they do. But to get paid to play in the Ryder Cup, I just don't think that's an issue that really needs to come to fruition.
You were shoulder to shoulder with Zach Johnson. You saw the highs, the lows. The conventional wisdom says it's Tiger's job if he wants it in 2025. Do you want to be U.S. Ryder Cup captain?
I do. And after serving as vice captain, I do even more. I just got a taste of it, and I can't get that loop out of my mind, going back and trying to reconsider things that we could have done differently. And I can't find much, but I really want to. And I would love to have a crack at trying to captain a team. And, it's just something I think a lot of golfers, most everybody out here, would probably jump at the chance to do. And after being a part of it in that way in Rome, I think it's definitely something that's taken a center place in my heart. And I want to do it.
In addition to the five Ryder Cups you've played, Stuart, you've also played four President's Cups. And it's a Hall of Fame of captains you've played for. You played for Jack, you played for Freddie Couples and Curtis Strange and Tom Lehman and Hal Sutton. Of the captains you played for, who most impressed you by how they handled the role and why?
Well, it's easy to pick Zinger because he was my only Ryder Cup winning captain that I played four out of five. But I thought Zinger, the win, put that aside, he came into the Ryder Cup with a plan that was so He was so open about the plan to all of us players. He empowered us with a lot of decision making. He gave us all a good picture of what it was going to look like the week of the Ryder Cup before we went, who we were going to be with, who we were going to play our practice rounds with, who we're going to be paired with. He just simplified the whole week. When you play on a team like that, there's a lot of question marks about, like, what's the experience going to be like, especially for a new player. A lot of the caddies, too, we had a lot of questions like, are we going to be able to know, like, who we might be playing with? You know, like this practice round trip we took over to Rome a couple weeks before the Ryder Cup. Questions like that, Zinger really gave us the answers before. And I remember going into that Ryder Cup, and it was my, third or fourth? It was my fourth one. And I remember just knowing very settled in my heart about what was going to be going on that week, who I was going to be playing with. And that just settled me. And, you know, I didn't win the Ryder Cup for us personally. I won one match, and I think I lost two. So it's not like I was heroic that week. But it was a really good week in general for everybody. We knew what to expect. And I would pick Zinger out of that big lineup of captains I've played for just because of the organizational and transparency he showed before the cup.
Stuart, you've seen all sides of this game way back in 2005 at the John Deere Classic. You were in the field when Michelle Wee West played, an LPGA player playing against the men as Lexi Thompson will this week. Your thoughts on the 11-time LPGA winner in the field at the Shriners this week?
Well, I think it's cool. You know, it's a nice way for the tournament to show their support for the LPGA Tour and to sort of exhibit the skills that they have out there. And, you know, of course, she's got quite a lot of pressure on her this week. I was in the field when Annika played in Colonial. I was in the field with Michelle Wee a lot of times. I played with Michelle Wee in the Pro-Am at the Sony Open. So, you know, it's been cool over the years to see it happen. And I'll be one of the interested fans to see, you know, how Lexi handles it and see how she, you know, attacks the golf course and where her game might kind of differ from all of ours. But it's something that I feel very proud for her that she has the courage to come out and do it, because I think a lot of people would probably shy away from it.
Stuart, a couple of years ago, you won twice on the PGA Tour in one season, and you were at an age then where in professional golf they tend to give you the gold watch and tell you it's time to retire, and you were still getting those wins. Even now at the age of 50, do you still think you've got one more against the kids in you?
I do, and I wouldn't be out here playing if I didn't think I had that. You know, I'm in a place in my career now where really all I have to focus on is just trying to notch wins. I'm not going to change my lifestyle with FedEx Cup positioning or financial, you know, incomes or anything like that. So I love playing golf and competing. I'm pretty much a one-trick pony when it comes to that. I can cook ribs okay too, but I'm really a better golfer than I am a barbecue cook. So, and I learned a long time ago that golf pays way better than barbecue. So I still like doing this. I want to try to win. I've got my wife, Lisa, caddying for me, which is a joy. And so I wouldn't be playing if I didn't think I had a chance to win. I love testing myself against the best players in the world. And so I still think I'm going to keep playing on the PGA Tour for a little while. And yeah, I think I have a chance to maybe put one more win up, maybe more. I don't know, but it's going to take, you know, a lot of what I know I need to play well, and that's the discipline and the staying in the moment. And that stuff gets harder. That's actually the most difficult thing about getting into your later years playing golf, is the focus, the intensity, and finding that deep inside. It's in there, but finding it is not always easy. And I feel like I go through some spells of sort of, I don't know, I call it taking naps sometimes on the golf course. And the less naps I can take, the better chance I'm going to have to maybe notch another one.
Speaking of which, fighting jet lag and still deciding to spend some 20 minutes with us, Stuart, we appreciate the time. Have a great week in Vegas.
All right, appreciate it. Good talking to you guys.